going to be a good one. Oh, man, I'm excited for this one. My boy, Danny boy, back for First Pitch 305. What's going on, my man?
I'm ready to be here, Alex, from a fellow Jeopardy winner to another. I can't wait to be here and talk about this. Not going to include Kevin because a little Mickey Mouse there, but I wish we could talk about the positives. That's why I have Jake Berger in the bag. The only positive so far from that game against the Cardinals and so far in this 0-8 start.
Kevin, what an intro for you right there. Just Danny just like softballing it up for you. Doing it's okay. You're gonna get that Jeopardy win soon. We believe in you. I you know you always get my support even when I'm competing against you. I've always rooted for you as well. Even when I became a back-to-back Marlins Jeopardy champion, just wanted to throw that out. but that's Danny. That's Kevin. The guys from Fish Stripes, or I'm sorry, Fish on First. It's not. But you know, it's not as bad as. But Kevin, what did you first call Lemon City? Lemon City Lime. I don't know which is worse. I don't know. At least I got the first. At least I got the old name right.
But Lime.
Point is, I got two amazing guys from Fish on First. They're here for First Pitch 305, Episode 6, Season 2. And last episode was a fun episode. We kind of, you know, went into off the beaten path of recapping Marlins games and the season so far. We talked about a FanDuel's graph that had Hanley Ramirez as the Marlins' GOAT. So, and we got me, Edwin Garcia, and Gabriel Garcia. They joined the show and they gave their takes, and so did I, of who we think the GOAT is for the Marlins. And we also, at the end of the episode, pitching the case for Hanley. We weren't just crapping on him the whole time. But that was a fun episode, something different on First Pitch 305. But guys, on this episode, we got some, you know, breaking news that happened a few hours ago today. Let's get into that. I'm sure a lot of fans are heartbroken. They're really bummed out about it. Gentlemen, Eury Pérez is out for the remainder of the season. He'll be undergoing Tommy John surgery. Kevin, set the table for us here. First reaction when you saw the news, were you surprised? Or I know he was having lingering injuries, but were you surprised that it got to this extent?
I mean, to be fair, I had put my phone down for like about an hour, and I opened it up to see about, I want to say, 40 text messages from the Fish on First group chat, about a couple 50 notifications from Twitter about this, and I'm like, oh God, what happened? And I see the Eury thing. I'm like, oh my God, this is not what I think. I don't think anyone saw this coming. You look back at the first time he was diagnosed with what Peter Bendick said was a mild elbow inflammation. You really thought this was best case scenario for him. I think everyone at that point thought he was getting Tommy John the first time around. And I think they were just trying to push it a little bit, see if maybe some rehab, some time away from throwing the baseball would work. And I think they pushed it a little too much. I was very surprised. They had him throwing about a couple days later after the injury, what it felt like. And then the bullpens, he threw two of them before throwing that final one, which is where he had a discomfort once again. And that's when they suggested Tommy John. And to say that I'm shocked is an understatement, but at the same time, it's like, I'm not really, because I think this is what we all expected to happen the first time around. I was very shocked that he wasn't undergoing Tommy John the first time. And I mean, it just, you know, and this is where I go on my little rant here, because I was going to do it the first time. And if he had, you know, like the Marlins babied this guy to the end. They sent him down to AA. Hmm. They brought him back up. They kept him in Miami. They put him on the IL for, you know, obviously probably an actual injury, but in all honesty, they probably put him on there because they wanted to shut him down. Like, you have to think about it. Like, in today's age, babying a guy won't get you too much. And Eury Pérez is exhibit A on why that's the case. And now he's undergoing Tommy John. So it goes to tell you, look, as much as you want to do this, as much as you want to limit a guy's pitch count innings, you're just going to have to let him go out there, man, and do his thing. I mean, this guy had multiple starts where he could have gone into the seventh, and didn't happen because of a pitch count, didn't happen because of an innings limit. And, I mean, we all remember when he got sent down right before, I think it was right before, right after the All-Star break, and all of our reactions were, this is not how you should be handling this type of situation. You're in a moment in the season where you have the chance to make the playoffs, where you're into running. For, you know, you're in it. I mean, for the first time since 2003, you're really in it. And Fortunately, you know, things happened. He stayed in Miami for like an extra week. He ended up pitching like 5 innings, 2 one day, 3 the other. So, I mean, it was just poorly managed, in my opinion. Obviously, this was with Kim, so it's a different case. But for the most part, the same staff is still here in terms of Skip and those guys. But, you know, they were going to have him go about 145, 150 innings this season, all at the major league level. And unfortunately, things happen, and he is now done for the year. And, you know, and this is good. You know, to a certain degree, you have to tell yourself this is good. You're getting this out of the way early. Almost every pitcher goes through this type of situation, and he's doing it at, what, 21 years old? So you have to feel pretty good about his future still.
I mean, it's funny how you ended off like you ended, you know, I appreciate you sharing that, and it's true. It's great for our listeners as well, getting that perspective, who don't really know the intricacies of how the Marlins have been handling Eury Pérez. But you make a good point. I think, you know, babying too much, you know, coddling a player too much, you know, in terms of their development and I guess how much they can exert themselves as well. You make a lot of interesting points that I'm sure a lot of people will agree with you. And is this something that new in terms of Marlins history, but also just in baseball history itself? A big one that comes to mind, not the main one, but a big one that comes to mind is Strasburg. When he first came up, the whole innings limit thing, and he was dominating. He was having a very successful run, and Eury had a very similar run, not maybe as dominant or as long because of just his injury circumstance, but still, sometimes babying can be a little bit, you know, it can hurt. It can hurt a team, and it can, you know, I don't know. I can steer them the wrong path, you know, in terms of just like, I don't know. Now I just feel like we were just relying, not maybe like the fans, but also the team, and I'm sure players as well. They were like, I guess, having that hope that, you know, okay, Eury will kind of come back and maybe help things, you know, right the ship a little bit in the rotation, and we're not going to see that. So let's see how, from a team perspective, how they bounce back and from this news. You know, it's only up from here when you're 0-8. But thank you, Kim, for sharing that. And you do make a good, you make a lot of good points. But Danny, I want to get your side of things as well. When you first heard the news about Eury, what went through your mind? You know, what was going on with you?
Yeah, the first thing I thought was that I just couldn't believe that was happening again to the Marlins. It seems like this is the fourth time a Marlins pitcher has Tommy John surgery. It feels like in the past year and a half, for Eury, Sandy, Max Meyer, Anthony Bender. I don't know if I'm missing anyone else. Kevin will probably let me know there, but
it's a rite of passage at this point, which is kind of bothersome. It's like, oh, you know, luckily he got it early. He got Tommy John done early. And it's like, is this something mandatory now? Is it something I have to check off a list when you become a big league pitcher? It's, or like, are you getting your early 20s? I get it. He got it done early, but still though, it's like, and especially in super common now with the Marlins, and it's just happening at the worst times. It's reminding me, not to a certain extent, I'm sorry to cut you off here, Danny, it reminds me to a certain extent at a lot, much, much, much minute more level of what happened to the Mets. They had a potential to have a stellar rotation back a few years back with Harvey, Mats, DeGrom, Syndergaard, you know, and it just, everyone was just getting hurt at the wrong time. It couldn't really come together and you know, see the full potential of that talent. And this version, the Marlins version, they can't even reach the big leagues practically, or even put a half a season together. So it's frustrating. But Danny, I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but it just hit me, that whole Mets correlation. Like, but what were you saying there, Danny?
The whole rotation is seemingly gone now for the first month. You know, obviously Fandy's out now for the whole year, Eury Pérez. But if you go into it, if everyone was fully healthy, you would have had the starting rotation, Sandy, Eury, Braxton Garrett, Eric Cabrera, Jesus Luzardo. Those are five guys right there. All five of them even have all-star potential. Obviously, Jesus Luzardo, Sandy, more than the others.
Of course.
But yeah, it's just really incredible to see there. And out of those five guys, Luzardo is the only one who is currently pitching at the moment. That tells you how bad the injury bug has got to Marlins. I know Braxton Garrett's doing a pen session, and Edward has just not looked good so far in his rehab starts. The control has not been there at all, but it makes you really think that the Marlins could have gone out there and picked someone up in free agency, especially when you look at the deals that were made and the amount of money that given. I know Kevin's boy, I believe Jake Junis, looked really good so far this season. You have a guy like Martin Perez, who pitched really well against the Marlins, only for $8 million. Guys like Alex Wood. I know we saw Lance Lynn, but I don't know if you want to have that for that much money, but a little bit less. Maybe the Marlins could have gotten that there. Mike Clevinger, if you could deal with all the off-the-field issues, if you're okay with that, depending on the Marlins, how they feel about that, I believe $3 million, what he got there. And Michael Lorenzen, another guy with a total of $6 million. Those are innings that the Marlins could have used. Veteran guys you bring in there, obviously one-year type deals, less than they would have paid for Cueto. Segura, the type of money for guys who did not pan out. You could have got three guys, two guys who can go out there, maybe potentially give you 100, 120, maybe 145 innings, those names there, and it will not cost you at all. And if they don't pan out as well, you can always trade them in the trade deadline. But even if you just eat the money again, it is just 1 year until everyone else comes back healthy. And that's what irks me the most, is the opportunity to go out there and improve upon a team that went to the playoffs and not doing so, not getting those starting pitching free agents. And the guy you did get, no offense to Tim Anderson, but the numbers speak for themselves, was graded out as easily the worst player in baseball last season, especially defensively. I know he's looked a little better this season, but overall, when you're getting for $5 million, you will want to see someone improve, and hopefully Tim Anderson does that. But to only spend $5 million in an offseason and you get a guy who's maybe not the best, but you could get him for $5 million, if you can make other deals too, then it would have been a really good offseason. But just looking at the deals, the amount of money that was spent, it makes you wonder why the Marlins couldn't have done that. At least one pitcher, I would have been happy.
I think right now the situation you have to look at with the Marlins is now they're probably even more forced to go out there and go look for a pitcher. And the one situation I would really monitor, because I think we had heard about this with Craig mentioning it on Twitter, was Jake Odorizzi, who signed a minor league deal with the Rays. He made his appearance with Durham yesterday, and there's still a chance he could opt out of that deal. I mean, if he doesn't see a way for him to make that roster at any point, he could opt out, and seemingly Miami could just give him a major league deal and he could be in that rotation. And that's a proven starter for many, many years. He was, I believe, he recently won a World Series. It may have been with the Astros or the Braves, but he was on a World Series team.
I think it was Astros,
yeah. So he's been out there, and I know he struggled yesterday somehow, well, in AAA, but still, that's definitely a situation to look at it. And you mentioned the Steven Strasburg comparison, Alex. Look back even more recent with the Marlins themselves. Look at Jose Fernandez. They limited this guy. They shut him down. I think he threw even more. And I'll have to look at the exact number. But TJ the next year. I mean, it's not, I would say it's the carbon copy of what happened to Yuri Perez. But it's very similar. And it just goes to show that you could baby these guys all you want, and it really won't matter. So in 2013, Jose Fernandez threw 172 innings. He was limited to only 8 starts the following year. And again, with Yuri, it was, I believe, 124 innings. Well, far less, and it just shows you, look, it doesn't really matter. I mean, they're going to get it at some point. And Danny, you did hit the nail on the head with the list. So of two guys with TJ, I think it's Max, Yuri, Sandy. I think that's Bender. It. Who?
Bender.
Bender. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm right now just looking at the list of guys who are minor league deals that the Marlins could even get if they do it up. They mentioned Odorizzi, Zach Davies. Could be another guy, Eric Lahr, previously with Minnesota. Just looking at the list, not that many crazy guys if you want to dip your toes into that. Danny Duffy there. Logan Allen, not the FIU guy. Shout out to the FIU Logan Allen. But it's also when you look at just the regular free agents, not minors, it's Julio Urias. Don't want to touch that at all. Zach Greinke, Johnny Cueto, again, Vincent Velasquez, James Caparillion. If you want to take a chance, Chichi Gonzalez, shout out to Kevin for that one. Dallas Keuchel. But
Dallas Keuchel signed with the Mariners.
It is very bare bones there. It's just
– That's the bottom of the bottom of the barrel, the scraps, the scrap bin, the discount bin.
You also have to feel pretty good with the depth you currently have. I mean, I know it's not the greatest, but you have Yoni Chirinos down there in AAA.
Right.
You know, they brought in a lot of depth, which is why I don't feel horrible either. Because at some point, this was going to happen with Yuri. I always found it a little sketchy that they're really going to push this through. And you know, when you hear mild elbow inflammation or elbow inflammation to begin with, you immediately start thinking Tommy John. I mean, I don't see a Gerrit Cole situation here with Jiří. I mean, especially how young he is, you just never saw it.
Yeah, it's just hopefully you don't see that. And with Jiří, it's just making sure that he comes back 100%. I was listening to the broadcast, and they were saying how guys from Tommy John, maybe they come back better. They come back maybe sometimes throwing harder from Tommy John. So hopefully that is the case for Jiří. And again, I don't want to say that. I'm glad. You could be glad that he got it now. I would rather be glad that he didn't have Tommy John at all. But if he did have to have it, better off maybe now, where it's going to be ended up a lost season. Let him get out of the way. Let him come back 110% better. Let him become the future ace of this team. Let him come back with Sandy as well. We've all paired Sandy and Jiří Pérez since it seems like Jiří was a part of this Marlins organization. But hopefully everything goes good with those two guys. Come back 110% stronger. Come back with a full team. And the question will be, we probably get to this later, who will be on that team with those two guys going into, it seems like, 2025, full strength at 2026. But that's still a long ways away. And if things are looking like how they did today against the Cardinals, then that roster is going to be completely different than what we saw today.
And you got, both of you guys make a lot of good points. And Danny, especially with the whole offseason scenario, extremely frustrating. Cueto was, what, $16 million, something like that, his deal?
Yeah.
I believe, yeah, like 8, 9. I think Segura was 16, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
It was a 1+1. So you're right. It was 16, yeah, but they declined the team in the second year.
Right. But still, though, they were willing to put down that type of money for a player like that. And then you let, right. Okay. I understand that. But if you're going to, I guess we got our, as a fan base, we got our hopes up because of the playoff appearance and the type of season they had. But without saying anything, Peter and the front office of the Miami Marlins, without saying it, they've shown it that they're going to rebuild. They're going to rebuild. I'm sure they didn't expect an 0-8 start, but I'm sure they knew this team wasn't going to compete probably. This team wasn't going to compete for much. You're probably going to be a 500 team or maybe a few games under, 10 under around there, hovering around there. You know, especially with all the injuries going in the season with the rotation.
Yeah.
So... But then, if you just made a slight effort, and like I get it, you don't want to spend money, but these guys that you guys mentioned, Alex Wood and those guys, like they're not costing you much, and you still want to remain competitive. Like, isn't that the goal?
Look at the Royals.
Yeah,
the Royals spent almost close. I think they spent $100 million on multiple guys, and they're the ultimate team where it seems like they're probably going to be rebuilding. Of course, they gave the huge contract to Bobby Wood Jr. They still have the Salvador Perez contract, and they still went out there and said, we want to give you guys the best product that we can. We want to help win that division. Of course, the AL Central, NL East, two completely different divisions. But still, just putting it out there, a team that was, I believe, top five in the draft last season to go out there and spend $100 million. When was the last time we saw the Marlins spend $100 million? And they did that for multiple guys. Garrett Hampson, Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha. Not guys who are superstars, but guys who are going to give you innings for those pitchers. I know I'm forgetting some names there. Garrett Hampson, we saw, really productive for the Marlins. Now going ahead.
Marlins could have signed somebody like that or a player similar to that. They didn't try.
They didn't bring in Nick Gordon for that kind of role.
Like, I love what the Royals
the trades. They did a couple of trades of Marlins. And the best, I guess the highest tier trade was the Nick Gordon one, though. Because they had the Betancourt trade, right? And the Vidal trade. So, they were active in the offseason, if you want to put it like that. But listen to the names I just said. No offense to them, but they're not moving the needle to make the playoffs again. They're really not. And they made it very clear. And now, I guess... me personally, and I guess as a fan base to a certain extent, we need to, I guess, come to that realization that they're not the Peter Bendix and the Miami Marlins front office, they're not attempting to be competitive this year. They're not. They're like, this is what we can provide right now based off our means, and this is it. You know, Bell and Berger, we're going to milk the hell out of that campaign. And that's pretty much it. You know,
Virginia's still, man.
I'm sorry?
No Whopper Jr. still either.
You know, Kevin's still waiting for his free Whopper Jr. for a Marlins home win. He's still waiting for that.
Yeah, man.
He has that.
I don't have to talk to you for that. That's not, you know, that's
probably. You don't get it?
The Whopper Jr.? No.
So Burger King partnered with the Marlins, and after every Marlins win, you get a free Whopper Jr.
Yep.
You get a free Whopper Jr.
Wait, have you seriously gone to a Burger King and asked for a free Whopper Jr.? Because the
Marlins haven't won at home.
No, they haven't won.
No, but also there's a campaign that started this season.
Yeah, this is this year. Okay. Yeah. Whenever the Marlins win at home, you go to the Burger King app and they'll have it loaded that you get a free Whopper Jr. because the Marlins win.
This is becoming like the Detroit Pistons.
You can't even get a free Whopper Jr.
Yeah, I think like there's like Wing House or something. Wing Stop had like a deal with the Detroit Pistons.
With the Pistons.
It's becoming like that.
The funny thing is there were like two Wing Stops like in Detroit or something. So,
oh my gosh, it would have been like havoc. But I get you guys. It's a lot of frustration going on right now, like in terms of just like Marlins, the fan base, everything. And then Yuri Perez going down is the cherry on top of this just really bad, like I guess, you know, shitstorm for lack of a better term. And it's just, you know, it's unfortunate. And then to come into the game today, an afternoon game against St. Louis Cardinals, they have a chance to, you know, I finally get that first win of the season. And once again, the bullpen, you know, collapse and they give up a lead and they ultimately lose the game 8-5. And it's just as a fan, that's the frustrating part. Obviously, Yuri going down, that's extremely sad, but you know what? He's going to come back. And we just got to, like, as Danny said, we just got to look to the future and just try to have that positive mindset as much as possible. But what's going on right now is that they're 0-8, but a lot of these games, they, you know, they're blowing it out late in the game, and they can be around, you know, 3-5, 4-4, around there. Respectable, at least.
Yeah.
And they're not right now.
Powerhouse teams. You didn't go up against the Braves. You didn't go up against.
No. No, they got them coming soon.
Dodgers. You know, the Pirates, who were at the tail end of the division last season, but, you know, maybe going a little more further up there. And then you have the Angels, who lost Ohtani. And with the Angels, that, you know, their historic bad luck team in terms of overall in the season. But of course, when you have a guy like Mike Trout, Nolan Schanuel, guys like that, they really killed.
I mean, yeah, but they,
that Max
won at least one game in that series, I would say.
But look at the Angels, for example. No one is going to expect them to compete. No one.
Yeah.
And they still signed guys like, and I get it. I'm going to probably get a lot of slack for this because of the names, whatever. But like, they were still willing to, okay, like, that guy's available. Okay, let's sign him. Maybe we can revive his career. Like Miguel Sano, he had a good game, I think, one of
that series against Miami. Yeah, I think he went 2-for-3. He had
two doubles.
Hits. Like, we're talking about Aaron Hicks here.
Right, another player that, like, no one's going to, like, but you know what? Say, hey, let's take a flyer on a player. And the thing is, the Marlins didn't do that. They didn't do that. Their only flyer was Tim Anderson. And it's like, really? Like, you can find other options around that price range. Is the ceiling $5 million? Is that what we were going to do? That's even worse than the Rays. The Rays are a very similar market or a similar budget to the Marlins. And they spend more. They definitely spend more than $5 million this offseason. And that's the frustrating part here. And you can use guys like that during times like this, because it seems like no one's stepping up during this 8-game losing streak to start the season. But guys, I guess now, since we wrapped up our Yuri conversation, as everyone knows, he's out for the season, you know, onto 2026, as Danny said, with him and Sandy together, so which that'll be exciting. But guys, let's just go now to come back to the present and talk about today's game and just talk about this 0-8 stretch. Danny, I'll just start off.
I would say, as you mentioned, maybe there weren't too many no positives at all to start the season. Yeah. I would say there is one positive, and that's Jake Berger.
You're right.
Right now, to me, it looks like he will be the all-star for the Marlins. The way he's playing, he continues that. He has the potential to do that.
Him or Jesus, you know, like, it's just Lizardo. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Brian Hoeing. No, I'm kidding.
No, the way it'll be Ken Emanuel. But just the way Berger has been playing, has just been absolutely incredible. A two home run game in his hometown, St. Louis. I saw the back-to-back home run, him and Josh Bell. And, man, when Josh Bell gets going, it's hard to stop him. Talk about a guy who's been there, done that. I love him when Josh Bell gets hot. And Jake Berger has just been, right now, the best player on this team. You could say he's the face of the team as of right now. This instant, I would say Jake Berger easily the best player on the roster right now, at least offensively. And this is the guy who's even throughout – the losses has had a positive attitude. I know Noah tweeted out a couple days ago his interaction with Jake Berger post game, talking about, you know, you just got to keep your head up, you got to keep moving forward. You know, if you want to keep getting that win, and really what looking forward to for that. But Jake Berger has just been positive. He's been a clubhouse leader, even in his short time as a Miami Marlin, his short time as an MLB player. I believe this will be his first full season. Yep. As an MLB starter, and it's just been incredible for that. The organization has taken up to him. He's getting deals with Burger King. The community has been 100% behind him. He's getting deals. Also, you know, you look around the ballpark, Jazz has his own milkshake, and then you have Jake Berger with his own burger. You see those two guys, the faces of the organization, especially with Jake Berger doing it so quickly. And this season, amid everything that's going wrong, he has just been incredible, to say the least. Offensively, just a little bit on a slash line, hitting .355, .400 on base percentage, and he's slugging .581. He already has double-digit RBIs this season, including with the lead in the home runs for the Marlins. It's just incredible from Jake Berger. I hope he could do it consistently for the rest of the year.
Right, because he does strike out a lot. He has that history.
Yeah, he does. And again, how would a tack on a season on Jake Berger on a full year, especially playing third base? This is a guy that's going to sometimes play first base. He's going to go into the DH role as well. But again, as of right now, Jake Berger has just been, I don't want to say as advertised, I would say more than that. He has just been all-star 100%. Caliber. Amazing, amazing.
Yeah,
the lone bright spot for sure.
Berger, sorry to cut you off there, but
no, you're good.
Yeah, with Berger, it's not just like, you know, how good he's been, it's how he's been able to keep his 2023 Marlins stint consistencies to 2024. I mean, he's only struck out four times in 31 plate appearances. He has one less walk than strikeouts, but still, it goes to show that whatever approach he had in 2023 really stayed consistent to 2024. And I mean, man, this guy had a horrible spring. There's just no other way to say it. It was really bad. And it goes to show that spring training doesn't really matter what you do there. It's really about, you know, getting the reps into the regular season. And that's what Berger was able to do there in that case. And I mean, that's definitely been by far, I mean, the biggest positive for the Marlins this short season thus far. And I think you mentioned it too, you know, some of these long men have really helped out the Marlins. Brian Hoeing. I mean, dude's been shoving for the team. And, you know, quick shout outs to Kent Emanuel, who really saved the bullpen the other day. Vladimir Gutierrez came into a very high leverage situation. Yeah. He only made one bad pitch, which unfortunately ended up being the 3-run homer, but we'll see what happens with him. He's in DFA limbo. So I mean, there's like here and there, there's a couple of guys. I mean, Josh Bell, I know he struggled a lot during that Angel series, but he for the most part, he's been pretty good. So, you know, 0-8, but still.
Jazz has gotten some big hits, but like collectively, it just hasn't really come together. Exactly. And the problem is that like this offense, as you mentioned, there has been bright spots and they have been putting up numbers compared to recent years. So like examples today, they put up 5 runs. They had a lead going to the late innings. They didn't win. A game against one of the games against the Angels, they put up 4 runs right out of the gate in the first inning. Didn't score a single run after that. And it's like you have a team on the ropes, you can keep capitalizing, and you didn't. From the second to the sixth inning of that game, when the game that I'm referring to, when they scored 4 runs in the first inning, from the second to the sixth inning, they had a runner on base to lead off an inning, or a runner on base with less than 2 outs from the second to the sixth. And they couldn't score. Some of those innings, I think 3 out of those 3 innings of in that span, they had 2 runners on base with less than 2 outs. And then the following game against Tyler Anderson, another guy that they got recently, I know not this past offseason, but recently, you know, that no one was probably thinking of to get, they got him, you know, and as a filler player, not as an ace or anything like that, but he, you know, and he had probably one of the best outings, if not the best outing of his career. In that series, and that, I think,
second game.
No, first game.
And going back to, you know, with Jake Berger, he has had a hit in every game this season, except for the Tyler and Anderson shutout, which it seemed like the entire team didn't get a hit. But
De La Cruz got a home run in the ninth, and that was it. Yeah. But it's like stuff like that. It's like you're coming off, and then I think to finish that series against the Angels, you're coming off a 6-0 start to your an 0-6 start to your season. You've already broken the record for worst start in franchise history at 0-5. So you're just, you know, pouring salt on the wound. And then you come out the next day and you lose 10-2. And it's like, where is that urgency? Where is that I guess energy of like enough is enough? And the hitting does well, but then the next day they lose 10-2. So the pitching's off. So it's just the hot and cold, the back and forth, whatever, however you want to phrase it, is just not meshing. It's just not coming together. And today was the perfect example. You know, offense was there, then it went cold. Then the pitching, starting pitching was decent with Ryan Weathers, but then the bullpen collapsed. Uh-huh. So it's just constant fluctuation. Nothing's ever evened out. Nothing's ever just, you know, in sync.
And yeah, again, that's how it is. It's not like the Marlins aren't keeping up with some of these teams offensively, because, like, for example, today the Marlins had 9 hits, Cardinals had 10. But I mean, man, like, we can't even talk about the offense here sometimes, guys. I mean, we have to talk about this defense. This is by far the worst defensive infield in Major League Baseball, and I don't even think it's close. When you have a left side of the infield of, no offense, Jake Berger and Tim Anderson, that's an issue. Although, in Tim's defense, he has been pretty damn good defensively this year. I mean, Luis Arraez, I think, is, you know, we saw it today in the game. Luis Arraez had a really crucial error in that bottom of the seventh, where he gave up, you know, which ended up being Sixto's really blow up anywhere. He gave up 5 runs. I mean, not 5, 3 runs, 2 earned. Nardi came in, gave up 2 more. But again, I mean, you could have gotten out of that inning pretty well. They could have won this game had Luis Arraez not made that error. Jake Berger made a very nice play. Unfortunately, he bobbled the ball, but it avoided extra bases. I mean, you look at his defense, and then the other day in that final game against the Angels, Jazz had that play where he kind of just like shot himself up to the air and fell. I mean, it's just sometimes bad reads, bad moments in games. Josh Bell has been a defensive liability this season for the Marlins at first.
Yeah, you mentioned the left side. The right side is nothing better either. It's Josh Bell and Luis Arraez. Like, all 4 guys in the infield are below average defenders. We're not trying to bash them. It's just the facts are there. The numbers are there. They don't save runs. They don't cover a lot of ground. You know, they don't have strong arms. They're erratic with their throws, especially Anderson from that, you know, especially the long throw from Anderson when he's deep, you know, playing deep in shortstop. But still, though, it's like the routine plays, they make it seem look difficult. Like, if a guy hits a hard ground ball at them, everyone's like still like kind of like on their, like, you know, squeezing their hands and kind of nervous, like, oh my god, is he gonna get that ground ball and make a clean throw to first? When you're having those concerns for routine plays, if he's gonna make a clean throw to first, that's a huge red flag. That's a huge red flag. But I don't think the Marlins have time to address it. They have to roll with what they got, because I think they have more concerning issues in the pitching department, you know. And I want to get into that now, guys, because I feel like that's a, I'm not going to say the main reason. There's a lot of, as our listeners can hear, there's a lot of reasons why the Marlins are 0-8 of not hitting with runners in scoring position, the defense, starting pitching, not going deep into games. I think the average length of a start is like, I think, a little over 4 innings. You know, I think
Max Meyer gave him, no, Luzardo won to the 6th in that Angels
game. But no pitcher's gone 6 innings complete.
Gone 6 innings, yep.
Exactly. So the bullpen is overworked. We're giving guys like Brian Hoeing a shout out because of just his longevity and just like having clean innings and long outings out of the bullpen. Uh-huh. The bullpen has definitely pitched more innings than the starters, which is a recipe for disaster. Once you get into June, everyone's going to be burnt out in the pen. So nothing in that department is going right. There are, but like, as you guys mentioned, there has been bright spots here and there in the offense. they haven't been, I guess, in terms of the pie. I guess they got a smaller piece of the blame pie, if you want to call, if you want to give it to them like that. Mm-hmm. But let's get into that bullpen, because they get a bigger chunk of that blame pie. And I want to like pinpoint here, not target. I want to talk about more in a concerned way with Sixto Sanchez. I'm so happy, and I was super excited, you know, that his comeback was essentially complete in terms of coming back to the MLB. He made the opening day roster. I know he was out of options, but still, though, like they could have like just got like continued, just parted ways, or just like left him behind. So they took a chance on him. Essentially, he's like, you know, you've done all the work, you've made it this far. I understand that. I guess I'm not saying they were giving him a reward, but still, though, I felt like, I don't know. Now looking at the results, is he truly ready? My opinion is, though, I think he's being misused. But I want to hear your takes. I want to hear what you guys think. We'll talk about the rest of the bullpen, but I want to start with Sixto first, because I feel like of his relevancy today with St. Louis, against St. Louis, and just his overall usage so far. Kevin, let's start off with you. Let's talk about Sixto. What have you thought about his performance so far this season?
Man, so let's go back to opening day when he first made his first when he made that first appearance. I mean, it was just a miscalculation there. Soriano wasn't able to give him the amount of innings that were expected. Skip said he needed two innings from Soriano, so I don't even think he got through one. So he had to go in with Nardi, which was supposed to be for the eighth, leaving Sixto for the eighth. So that whole thing was messed up. And aside from that, man, I mean, Sixto had to come out 2 days later, which he only did once during spring training, and give the Marlins two innings of work, where he gave up one earned run, but two runs in total. And then a guy, you know, now the St. Louis one, he just wasn't able to get out of it. And again, I feel like it's not much where he's been misused. I think it's more he's been unlucky. I mean, Luis Arraez with the error today at second base screwed him over huge. There's just another way to say it. And Luis Arraez isn't usually known for those, but he's had a couple this year. And then you have, again, opening day. There's not much you could do about that when, you know, Soriano gets into that situation. That's another guy that's really been struggling, but we'll get into him later. And then you have to go with Nardi there in that situation. That Pittsburgh one, that second appearance he made was really the one where you have to tell yourself, you know, that's probably how you're going to see Sixto being used. The other two times, it's really been unlucky for Sixto. And I do want to get your take on kind of like why you think he's being misused, because I don't disagree with you, and, you know, by any means. I mean, you can't put this guy in the eighth inning whatsoever. You should have avoided that as much as you could. And, you know, obviously today it was a weird situation because they were up by, I think, four runs by then. They were up big time. It was fine to put him in there, and he got unlucky.
Yeah, before we get to Danny's take on Sixto, I'll respond to you, Kevin, here. And you kind of answered it a little bit. I do agree with you that there is a bit of unluckiness with him. But let's be honest here, guys. Going into the season, I'm sure we were all happy that Sixto made the roster and he was going to be back in the MLB. But still, he's never really like. He's never pitched in front of MLB fans. He pitched in the 2020 year. So that alone right there, just from an emotional standpoint, this, not even the physical aspect of his comeback. And then, you know, finally making it back. And then we all did not expect him to be used in a setup role, because that's essentially what's happened to him a couple times, those couple moments, as Kevin has mentioned. Everyone, I think the general consensus was that he was going to be used in either mop-up roles or in long relief, or, you know, like take your pick, like very not like no high leverage situations yet, kind of just to ease his way back to the MLB. It's been almost 4 years since he's pitched on an MLB mound. Like you gotta like in terms of babying, that's I guess a sum of it. You need to do that, you know, I guess in terms of like easing him back into it. That's why I feel I don't understand, and why I guess he like Mattingly and his staff just wanted to use Sixto in those moments, in those high leverage moments. Maybe it's as a learning experience, or I get it. He throws hard. He's got nasty stuff, but you know, is that nasty stuff still there in terms of right now? He still needs time to, you know, find his groove, you know, and get his legs under him in terms of pitching in a major league baseball environment. So that's why I feel like he's just being misused, is that I feel like, man, you really threw him out there into the lions. Then you really threw him into the fire, which is some guys can perform well like that when they're faced with that type of pressure. Some guys can't. I'm not saying he can't, But right now, I feel like he's just been misused a little bit. But at this point, you mentioned a bunch of relievers, and no one's performing well. So, you know, you got to throw somebody out there to pitch. So that's how I feel like he's being misused.
So I guess I'm looking back at some of these situations. You look, I was telling you that second appearance. He was actually put into the game when they were down by one. So essentially, fairly high leverage. He was trying to kind of keep it together there. He ended up giving only one run in that game. And then today in St. Louis, he was up. I'm gonna pull up the screen, the thing again here. I believe he was up. They were up three by then. It was a five. They were up to 5-3. So I mean, you know, that's probably the closest situation you'll see Sixto being used in. That's, I think, today was as close as you're gonna get to how you'll see Skip manage the bullpen. He went with Ryan Weathers, who gave him five strong innings of work. Really good stuff. Yeah, go with Anthony Bender, kind of goes in there, gives you that one inning, and then it was really just Sixto and Nardi, and then it would have been Scott if they had a lead, they got to find a
better way to bridge that to Tanner, because I still believe in Tanner, even though he's been a little shaky with this control. But like, you know, he has the stuff. It's there. He's got it. He'll find it. So, you know, he has shown in his past to be a little bit wild, a little bit erratic, but when he's on, he's practically unhittable, and we saw it last season to end 2023. But Danny, we started to leave you hanging there in the shadows.
You're good.
You know, you're not like Laszlo from what we do in the shadows. You're here. You're good. But no, so talk to me, man. What do you think is going on with Sixto? What's going on? What do you think of how he's been used so far this season?
I think Sixto's still adjusting to life in the major leagues, especially how it is. Yeah. You mentioned in front of fans and get everything ready and travel and you know, actually being a major leaguer. I think he's still getting used to that there, getting in with emotions, everything that he is in touch with there. But I think I think they're still trying to figure out how they can use Sixto effectively. I think they're putting him in different situations to see how Sixto reacts to them, to see how he performs in those set situations. See a low leverage, high leverage guy. How many innings can we use him in? What part of the order will be best to use against Sixto? Top, middle, at the bottom of the order? How do you want to plan to use Sixto? I think now it's still too early to tell. I think Skip is still trying to figure out how to use Sixto and use him effectively, because, again, he doesn't have the same stuff that he did 4 or 5 years ago. This is essentially a brand new pitcher that the Marlins have got here to use, and they're still trying to figure out what ways they can use it, because Sixto has yet to even strike out a batter this season. So he's still trying to figure that out there. How could Sixto effectively get a batter out is the question right now that Skip is trying to answer. Again, it's still very early, only 3 innings pitched, been out there in different situations. I think he might put him out there, not for, I would say, tomorrow's game, but for the second and maybe even the third one. I'd like to see how he uses Sixto against the Yankees, because that's going to be a difficult matchup for him. Doesn't even matter if it gets righty or lefty. It's still any of those guys there can be very dangerous. I'd love to see him against Juan Soto there, see what happens in that situation. Guys like Giancarlo Stanton, see if he can strike him out. But effectively, just seeing how Skip is using Sixto, it's having a new toy to play with. He's still trying to figure out how essentially to use him at the start of the season.
I don't think the intention with Skip either was to throw him into the fire like that either.
I don't think so either.
I think it's what we all like kind of mentioned in our own ways. It was like easing back into it, you know, like for example, today, 5-3 game, perfect situation. Throw him in there, give you one or two innings of work, hold the lead. And I think what Danny said makes a lot of sense. I mean, you need to find ways that this guy could get out. And again, it doesn't need to be striking out the side or anything like that. I mean, look what Brian Hoeing has done. That guy has been getting out through ground balls for, geez, it feels like years already. And with Sixto, I mean, and then I think, you know, you said Sixto hasn't struck out anyone. Sixto has given up a run in each single appearance he's made this year. So not very encouraging there either, but we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, they're going to probably just try to see maybe, I think what Skip kind of had mentioned when he first got, you know, the news, when the report first came out that he was making the roster was more like, sixth inning, maybe seventh, where he set it up to Nardi and then Scott to finish it off, which, man, that's fine. But, you know, I think they have to ease him in a little more than that. And I think you make a great point, Alex, where, you know, there weren't fans in the stands when he did this the first time around. He went into a playoff game without fans. I mean, you still have to think about that. I don't know if when the Marlins went, I don't think for the NLDS there were fans either. So still look at that, and you have to tell yourself, like, you know, this guy is pitching in this environment where he's never done this before in his major league career. I mean, this guy is still, I think, he must be 25 by now or 26. I mean, he's still essentially a prospect. He's still a rookie.
Yeah, so true.
Really go quickly on, there, I want to expand on the bullpen scenario. You know,
yeah,
against the Angels, they did see a familiar face. You saw a guy like Matt Moore, and the way he's been playing as of late, the way he even ended that season, you're telling me the Marlins cannot bring him back? And looking at the bullpen now, you're trusting a guy who hasn't played in 4 or 5 years. You're bringing in a guy, I believe, at the tail end of the offseason in Birch Smith. You're rotating long relief guys as well, just because your starting pitchers can't get past 5-6 innings. So a guy like Matt Moore, again, he was only here, a couple weeks through, I believe, 4 or 5.
Yeah, he innings. Wasn't playoff eligible. Yeah.
But again, just the way he performed, you more or less, Mel can understand what he's doing. He's been with him. He understands him. You're telling me they weren't impressed, at least with his entirety of his season, what they saw from him, what they saw from him in the clubhouse. You're not getting a brand new guy. You're essentially getting a guy that you know of, and you can finally see how it is for the rest of the season, for a full season. But you're telling me they couldn't bring it back Matt Moore? I'm not sure. I forget how much he got.
He got like $10 million. So.
Yeah, but it just essentially, you know, the way the bullpen, I would have spent that. If you told me the way the bullpen, how it is now, I believe they have a 6.36 ERA. I believe Lewis told Kevin and I that earlier this evening. But I would have traded that $10, $8, $7 million to at least get those bullpen numbers down at least 2. If it was a 4.3, I would have been happy there and essentially paid that much $1 million for that. But it is easier to spend other people's money. But I would have loved to seen that, you know, get a couple relief guys who are proven, who are veterans. I know we trust Andrew Nardi, but again, we've only seen him for 1 year. Brian Hoeing, again, can be very unpredictable. You're trusting guys
for sure.
Gutierrez, Kenny Manuel. I believe Craig Mish had a really great tweet. Kenny Manuel, Matt Andrais, and Birch Smith, all guys who haven't not pitched in the major league since 2021. Yeah. And they're coming here for innings, for relief, for bulk, important innings for the Marlins. You're telling me that the Marlins trust those three guys? No offense to them, but I'm talking about the way coming
in. Words right out of my mouth.
3 years. Birch
Smith, yeah.
If you combine it, that is 9 years they have not played professional baseball combined. Since 2021, and you're telling me you couldn't bring back Matt Moore. You could have bring back, or at least sign veteran guys.
Fine guys.
Fine yeah. guys who can go and give you innings. But again, you're trusting guys who have not played MLB baseball in 3 years.
I've said this once, and I'll say it again. The Marlins, if there's one thing the Marlins develop, well, it's relievers. Andrew Nardi, for example, Brian Hoeing, George Soriano. Those
Where's are Anthony Maldonado?
Hey, there it is. Why not call up someone like Anthony? I've never understood the Birch Smith move. I know they needed innings and they needed.
So you sign a guy like that? It's
exactly
like that, service time. If you're trying to manipulate,
you have Declan Cronin sitting in AAA who had a phenomenal.
Yeah, opening. He was really good.
He'll be back. He'll be back.
What about Michael Givens? Is he opted out?
Michael Givens gave up like 5 earned runs the other day in AAA.
Oh, man. I was rooting for him to kind of like help out the bullpen.
I'm looking at 40, man. Maldonado, lights out reliever. That guy has closer experience, high leverage. Mm-hmm. Calvin Fauché, dude's hitting 96, 97 in AAA. He should be up here very soon, in my opinion. I mean, they have options, and they're going with these. Again, it makes sense why they're doing it. I mean, it can't be more obvious than why they're doing it. They need bulk guys, Matt Andrees. And I get it, you know, 2021, and they have better options out there. But again, Vladimir Gutierrez is in DFA limbo, and that guy was probably the best bulk guy they had this year. They're not going to call up Yoni Chirinos when he was supposed to make a start today. Darren McCacken, or whatever his name is, he's been really good, but again, made a start the other day. They're really limited, and you kind of tell yourself, those are probably the best options they have, but they're just not available right now. I'm not sure when Gutierrez... We'll find out about Gutierrez maybe tomorrow, but we'll see. I mean, those guys will be back at some point in the organization.
agree with everything you're saying, Kevin. But like those guys that you're mentioning, all those guys, like they were already here. Going into the season, they were already here. What I'm trying to get at is that this bullpen, we've said all the names already, all the current guys and the guys waiting in the wings in the minors. The current guys up in the bigs right now with those three guys that Danny mentioned and Nardi and Soriano and then Tanner Scott, you put it all together, that puzzle does not fit. It doesn't go well. It's not a solid bullpen from top to bottom. I get it. There's no such thing as a perfect bullpen, but you're trying to bridge the gap to your best reliever, Tanner Scott. It's not getting done right now. And they're relying on guys. They're not supposed to be there. Unfortunately, I hate to say it like that, but that's not what they're meant for, you know. So they're not being misused. It's just that who else are you going to throw out there? Because everyone's being overworked, and then they're not even going to make it to the All-Star break at this point. So I'm glad, appreciate you sharing that they do have relievers waiting in the wings in the minors, but the current product right now is just kind of like you're trying to glue things together when you really need tape, you know, that, and it's just not really like it's just really fragile right now. And it's like, you don't, who are you going to hand the ball off to after a pitcher? Cause no pitcher in this staff is going to go seven innings. So who are you going to hand the ball off to? Which is why I feel like Sixto is being misused, but not on purpose because of Skip, is because everyone we're throwing out there is not producing. So let's see what Sixto has. It's not meant for him this moment, but we need to see something else. Let's get a different perspective. So it's just a really, really bad, all these ingredients aren't going well together. And everyone knew that going into the season, though. It was like, okay, this is kind of a projected bullpen. This is pretty much a projected bullpen. It was no surprise. Maybe there was maybe one or two battles for spring training, if that. But this roster was pretty much set in stone for majority of spring training. And knowing that, because I noticed that, and I'm not a baseball guru or genius, but knowing that, they still didn't address it. That is the frustrating aspect of it. But this bullpen is, I don't know what you hit the panic button yet on this bullpen, but you bet they better start making some moves. So closing in on the hour here, guys. I feel like I went on a huge rant there.
We all had rants.
I feel like we had a lot of stuff to get off our chest, which is good. But, you know, last 5 minutes here, around there, let's just give our final thoughts. Danny, I'll start with you. Anything left that you have to say about the bullpen or anything with the Marlins in this 0-8 start to the 2024? Wrapping things up here with First Pitch 305, Season 2, Episode 6. Danny, take it away.
I think the AJ Puck experiment is not going well at all. I don't want to say it's time to put him back in the bullpen. I would give him at least 5 starts, maybe 6, to see how he does, give him a full full couple starts there. But as of right now, it does not look good. He had his longest start against the Angels, when I saw him, 4 innings, his longest start so far this season. He looked very rocky in the first inning, I believe 34 pitches. And then he kind of, I don't want to say cooled off, but he pitched better and better as the game progressed. But again, still gave up hits, walked a ton of guys. He's still walking a lot of guys there, driving in runs with those said walks. It really pains me, because when you look at the opposite end or another team that's doing the same thing, the White Sox with Garrett Crochet, longtime reliever, is now starting, looks like one of the best pitchers in baseball, at least for this season. I believe he's 3rd in the entire league in WAR. He is pitching lights out. 6 innings, I believe, and already in 2 starts, 6 innings twice, I believe. 11 strikeouts once, 8 strikeouts. When I saw those stats, again, I have my fantasy team, so that's why I'm a little more inclined on him. But he's basically pitching lights out. When I saw that, I'm like, yeah. Oh, telling me AJ Puck can't do this? If he did 5 innings, had half those strikeouts, didn't walk any of those guys, walked at least one guy, I would be happy as a clam.
Oh, for sure.
But AJ Puck has just not been what almost as advertised this spring. We were all drinking the AJ Puck Kool-Aid. I had him as a guy who I think could be an all-star. I think that was an underrated all-star pick the Marlins could have there with AJ Puck. I believe myself, Isaac, I don't know who else, we had him as our team MVPs. We were drinking the Kool-Aid, Alex. We were on it. We thought AJ Puck was going to be, this is the answer, this guy's going to give 150 innings. But yeah, right now, it looks like he might not even reach 90, just the way he's pitching. And it really sucks to see, because I believe AJ Puk really has that type of stuff. There was a reason why he was drafted in the top
10. He's got nasty stuff.
He had amazing stuff at Florida. Again, it's going to suck to see, but maybe there was a reason why the Oakland Athletics did trade him for JJ.
Well, they were going to make him a starter, if you remember, and they traded him.
Yeah, but Puk has nasty stuff. I don't deny that. And Danny, you do make a good point around, you know, closing this episode out with AJ Puk. So I do appreciate you sharing that. But like, if things don't work out with AJ Puk as a starter, I'm not saying it's not going to work out. I hope it does, because then the Marlins have a kind of like a secret weapon, especially, you know, like they kind of have something up their sleeve, kind of utility pitcher per se, you know. But this whole AJ Puk experiment isn't really working out. And if it doesn't, you can still send him back to the bullpen and you bridge that gap. As I mentioned earlier, you get a guy who's experienced in those situations, who has closing experience, not the best experience, but he at least has it under his belt in a pinch if they need it. And he can pitch you, he can give you the seventh and the eighth, because he has shown that he can give you multiple innings. So it's just a thought of maybe bridging that gap, because knowing the rotation that the Marlins have, so you bring, you send him back to the bullpen. Whoever fills that the fifth spot, we've said a plethora of names in this episode. Chirinos is an option right there, just to eat up innings. Who knows, as maybe going back to one of Danny's points, signing a guy that we mentioned earlier, there's still a few pitchers available or minor league contracts that might opt out, as Jake Odorizzi, you know, it was a name that we mentioned that stood out for me. So internally, they can make that move and then go externally and find someone to fill in that fifth spot in the rotation. It's not out of the question. And maybe he thrives back in that role, going back to the bullpen. It's just a comfort thing. And that's what it is. At the end of the day, pitching is a feel thing. It's something, you know, it's a huge mental game, but also you have to feel comfortable in these specific roles. So maybe this is not the role for him, but I'm still rooting for him. I do hope it works out. So, you know, Kevin, final thoughts for you in this episode, you know, what's going on with you?
Yeah, real quick. With Puk, I'm not ready to stop this experiment by any means. I think this is going to work. I think the one thing I would acknowledge is that he has two minor league options left. Edward Cabrera Braxton are very close to coming back, and they're going to have to choose an odd man out. And that may have to be AJ Puk. Send him down, give him some starts at the minor league level where the pressure really isn't there. He's going to be able to do his thing. He's still going to face really good competition no matter what. He's not going to face quadruple A backups. He's going to face, you know, pretty good triple A talent down there. I mean, I don't know if you've guys seen the Baltimore Orioles triple A lineup. That's a major league lineup right there.
Oh, yeah.
And practically, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he'll get some good reps down there. And when they're ready to bring him back up, they'll do it. I mean, there's no rush to do this. I mean, this is not at all. I mean, Peter Bendix is not being graded on wins and losses this season. He's just being graded on what's coming after. You know, how did the moves that he made this offseason with his front office and the minor league system, how will that help him out moving forward? And aside from that, man, I mean, again, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Always a good time to talk Marlins with you guys. And the last thing I'll say is, man, I mean, we just got to keep positive, you know, keep our heads up. I think we'll get a win. They have to win. They're going to have to win a game at some point. I mean, you know, they have Steven Matz against on Saturday. And you have Trevor, who had a really nice start against Pittsburgh in his first back game.
Need
back.
A couple wins before the Yankees.
We'll see Emmanuel Rivera most likely make his debut there, new acquisition. And we'll see Avi Garcia and Vidal Brujan in the lineup against the lefty. So we'll see what happens.
Avi, so I'm still rooting for him as well. And hopefully they can hit lefties. They have a recent history, the last couple seasons, of not hitting lefties. Hopefully, as Danny said, they can notch a couple wins before they get to that gauntlet of New York and then coming back home for the Braves and then the Giants. Oof. So things are going to get a little difficult here for the Marlins, but hopefully that, you know, try to stay as positive as possible, as Kevin said. But that's Kevin Barral. That's Daniel Rodriguez from Fish on First. I'm Alex Aguirre, host of First Pitch 305. This has been Season 2, Episode 6. And remember, guys, even though they're 0-8, let's go Fish.